We're talking about the impact of $5 an hour temporary raises at some state correctional facilities. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The State Corrections Department has relied on using overtime to cover staffing shortages, and last year, nearly $50 million went to overtime pay for Department of Corrections workers. Earlier this spring, the governor's administration gave temporary $5 an hour raises to try to retain staff at some prisons. Do you work at a prison where these temporary raises are in place? How do you feel about them as a stopgap way to deal with personnel issues? And starting officers make a little over $16 an hour at most state prisons. Do you think staff should be paid more? We're at 800-642-1234. Patrick Marley covers state politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he analyzed the staffing data at the prisons with temporary raises. Patrick, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me on.
So earlier this year, the Evers administration gave these temporary raises for officers at six prisons. So what's changed at these facilities since then?
Most of them have seen a pretty substantial improvement in their situation with staffing shortages. There were four prisons where they saw a big drop in the number of what they call vacancies when they have an unfilled position. So, for instance, at Lincoln Hill School, which is the juvenile prison up north, they had 21% of their jobs open at the end of April. As of the end of August, they were at just 8% of those open. So a big improvement there. The secretary says that shows this program is working. But the converse here is that there are many other state prisons where the $5 raises were not given. And at many of those, they saw changes in their problems with their staffing shortages got worse, in some cases much worse. Which suggests that some of the way these jobs are getting filled at the prisons with the higher pay is just people are transferring to those prisons, or people, new hires, are deliberately going to the prisons with the higher pay.
Oh, so they're following the money, so to speak, in order to
Sure.
get a better living wage.
That's right. I mean, if you could work at one prison for $16.65 an hour or a different one for $21.65 an hour, you might choose the higher wage. Now, obviously, there are regional concerns. If your family's in one part of the state, you might not want to move to the other part. But that appears to be a big driver here in where the workers are going.
And these temporary raises were given out to security workers. So which employees at these facilities got raises and which didn't?
So these would be the officers and sergeants who are getting the raises. That's always the big concern of prisons. These are the people who have the direct responsibility for maintaining order in the prison and overseeing the inmates. When they have openings in those positions, when a shift is unfilled because they don't have enough workers or because somebody's sick, they have to bring someone else in to do it. So usually that means an officer who's already there has to work another shift, or they get called in on a day off or a shift they're not working. So you hear complaints from these officers that, you know, it's not uncommon to work 16-hour days, many times with little notice, which obviously can be very disruptive to family and personal life.
Patrick, the raises were issued only to prisons with the most severe staffing issues, which some lawmakers have disagreed with. What are lawmakers saying on this?
So, they're concerned about the cost of this. It's about $15 million through next year, possibly as high as $17 million. And they're concerned that it would create this sort of whack-a-mole situation. They solve the problem of staffing shortages at prisons with the worst problem right now, but create new problems at other prisons. And so far, that appears to be happening a little bit. Another concern is that every maximum security prison but one in the state got the $5 raise. So the lawmakers in southwestern Wisconsin who have the Bosqueville prison in their district, which is the one maximum security prison that didn't get the $5 raise, say that's not fair. The reason that prison didn't get the raise is because it had a pretty decent staffing situation relative to other prisons. They say that shows good management, good working conditions. They shouldn't be punished for it. They should be rewarded for that. So they'd like to see the $5 pay raise extended to that prison. It doesn't look like that will happen, though.
We're talking with Patrick Marley, who covers state politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he's been looking at the impact of a temporary wage increase at six prisons in the state with severe staffing shortages. You can join in. What do you think should be done in Wisconsin to improve the work environment of prison staffers? Is increasing wages enough? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Patrick, Corrections Secretary Kevin Carr has been a vocal advocate for increasing worker wages. Where does he come down on these temporary raises and how the situation is playing out?
So he is the one who put together this plan. I mean, he's the number one advocate of it. He's the one who made it happen. He says that he wished that this is about all he could do, that he wishes he had more money and more authority to give the $5 raise across the board at all prisons. But he views this as a success, points to the change in a very short period of time in their staffing level at these six prisons. So he sees this as a success. Now, in the meantime, Republicans who control the state legislature put in place a separate wage increase that will go to all employees. And that's more modest. It's about $2.35 an hour that takes place between now and the summer of 2021. And so they say it's better to spread the money around to more prisons. And that's the way to improve the staffing situation long term.
Well, looking at this temporary raise, staffing issues have worsened at some prisons, as you mentioned, that did not get temporary raises. What have those facilities seen recently, like Kettle Moraine, for instance?
Yeah, Kettle Moraine is the place where they saw the biggest shift in the wrong direction. Before this raise was given, they had about 13% of their jobs in these security classifications unfilled. As of August, it had jumped to 22%. So that's one in five jobs, a nine-point swing in just a few months. There are a couple of other prisons that have seen swings nearly that big. At Red Granite Correctional Institution, it started as at a higher point, 17%, but it's now at 26.5%. So, one in four jobs that are unfilled. And when you talk to staff there, they say it's just absolutely untenable that they all expect to be working three double shifts a week, and that it's very, very tough on family life. And they get concerned about the ability to maintain order at the prisons because, you have workers who haven't gotten enough sleep. They're concerned that the safety of inmates or staff could be put at risk.
So what happens when the temporary raises go away next summer?
That's right. So everybody, this is from, new hires on up to senior employees in the officer and sergeant classifications, got these $5 raises. But in summer of 2020, that will go away. Their pay will be lessened. It won't go down the full $5 because of this raise that the Republican lawmakers put in place. But they'll see, a drop of maybe $3 or $4 an hour. And, that may – everybody knew that going in. It doesn't make it any harder to adjust to. This $5 raise is worth $10,000 a year. So it's going to – it's a boost to them now, but it's going to be it's going to be something that's going to hit them again, and we'll have to see at that point what the staffing situation is like at the prisons. This has been a very difficult problem for the state for many years. It seems to have gotten worse in recent years, but they've had chronic difficulty in filling in these jobs and then keeping people once they do hire them.
Patrick, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Patrick Marley covers state politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. When we come back, we'll look at minivan sales and why they've been so low. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the rise and fall, perhaps potential rise again of the minivan here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So back in the 1990s and early 2000s, Chrysler sold more minivans by itself in their heyday than the entire industry does today. And last year, minivan sales sank to their lowest level in more than 30 years. The world's first minivan rolled off Chrysler's assembly line at the end of 1983. It was the vehicle that saved Chrysler from financial ruin. Here's how Chrysler introduced its 1984 Dodge Caravan.
Dodge Caravan, one vehicle that takes the place of an economy car, sporty car, station wagon, and van. Dodge Caravan is a transportation revolution.
Is your minivan a revolution? Do you drive one? What do you like about it? How does the space you get compare to other options? Is there a stigma attached to the minivan? Love them or leave them. Join in 800-642-1234. Jamie Page Deaton is executive editor at U.S. News & World Report. She's also a North American Car and Truck of the Year juror. Jamie, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me.
So take us back to those early days of the minivan there in the 1980s. What were we thinking? Why did the minivan come on the scene?
You know, the minivan came on because it is the most efficient way to move a lot of people and their stuff. I mean, if you think back before the minivan, the quintessential family car was the station wagon. And while the station wagon was great, you had that second row bench seat. So you were sitting, three or in the days before seatbelts, four or five kids across. You had a large cargo area and those incredibly unsafe, back seats in station wagons where you may or may not have had seatbelts.
And you were facing the windshield. Remember that?
Yes, you were facing backwards. In some models, you were facing, kind of riding sideways, facing the inside of the car. And so when the minivan came along, suddenly families were offered a lot more space, a lot more convenience with the sliding door, because I don't know if you've ever parked next to a bunch of kids piling out of a car. Well, whack, the door goes open. It hits the car next to you.
Yep.
Sliding door solves that, solves some space constraints. And the other nice thing about minivans and what they brought along was they were still easy to drive, because prior to the minivan, all you had were these full-size truck-based cargo and large passenger vans. These are the vans that you still see doing, hotel shuttle duty. It's probably the last time most people have ridden in one. But, with the minivan, this is something that has, the size and space of a van, the passenger capacity of a van, but drives like a car. And so when they came out, they were really revolutionary and became the de facto, family car of the 80s all through the mid 90s.
All right. So we're in the 80s and 90s, but now we hit the early 2000s. Minivan sales peaked at over a million, and then they dipped after the housing bubble burst. Have we seen sales ever recover from that?
No, sales haven't recovered. And there's the reason behind that really is just consumer tastes changed. And in large part, those tastes changed because we saw the evolution of the SUV into the crossover. So just like, the minivan came and gave people all the benefits of a van with the driving characteristics of a car, crossovers or SUVs and crossovers used to be truck based, very difficult to drive, very prone to rolling over, and not all that comfortable. Well, now with SUVs becoming more crossovers, which is car-based, they are comfortable to drive, they get better fuel economy, they have lower risk for rolling over, and they have a lot of the same space as the minivan, not quite the same amount, but enough that people are comfortable with it and it still fits, most families. And, it doesn't have the same kind of, mom jean, dad bod stigma that a minivan does.
So give us a lay of the land here. Which companies still make minivans, remind us?
Well, there's only one domestic automaker that still makes minivans, and that is Chrysler and their subsidiary Dodge, because, they were the original. They're going to stay with it. Honda has the Odyssey. Kia has the Sedona, and Toyota has the Sienna. And you can actually see how all these minivans compare if you go to usnews.com/cars. We have a whole minivan ranking page where you can see, how all of these stack up against each other. But really, when it comes to choosing a minivan, I would say they're all really, really good. And because minivan sales and minivans as a whole aren't all that popular, if you choose a minivan over a crossover or an SUV, you're going to be in a stronger negotiating position when you go to the dealership.
We're studying the minivans on the road, tracing their history with Jamie Page Deaton. She's executive editor at U.S. News & World Report. Did you drive a minivan for years and just decided to switch over to something new? What pulled you away? Or have you decided to return to the minivan after a hiatus? How did you land on that decision? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Adam now in Deerfield. Hi, Adam.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So we drove very small cars. I had a Honda Civic for a lot of years and then a Corolla. And my wife drives a Matrix. So small cars, we're big fans of smaller vehicles, better fuel economy. But based on family size, we needed to upgrade. Now, I grew up in a house where we had Chevy Beauville, a big Chevy 20. And that was big and cumbersome, and I wound up driving it myself after that got passed on to me. But we wound up buying a Toyota minivan, the Sienna, and between my wife and I, it was this ongoing, who's going to have to drive it? I didn't want to drive it. She didn't want to drive it. And I wound up driving it just because of the amount that I was taking kids around, and I love it. Absolutely. Fine, I will take this over even the small car now. It's just amazing the things that we can do with this vehicle, just the size, shuttling kids with this Toyota, the turning radius on it is just incredible. So, yeah, it drives as good as a compact car, if not even, I would argue, even better. It's just phenomenal. So I'm a huge fan.
Adam, thanks so much for the call. Jamie, there, you heard handling. Adam really likes how it handles.
Yeah. And, you know, that is something that I think a lot of people, you know, kind of probably sound like Adam and his wife, where they say, you know, we need this, but I don't want to drive it. You drive it. And then they end up loving it. I know that whenever I have a minivan in as a test car, you know, for a week long loan, by the end of the week, my husband and I start debating buying a minivan again, because they're really on the market today. There's not a smarter way to move a lot of people and move a lot of stuff. And, you know, people think about it in terms of, you know, families with young kids. But if you have, you know, maybe an older parent living with you, minivans are great because they're so easy to get in and out of. You're not climbing up and you're also not sitting down. You're just kind of sliding across. So if you have anyone in your family with mobility issues, even if you don't have kids, but you have a, you know, a hobby that requires a lot of stuff. I know a lot of people who do dog shows rely on their minivans to move their dogs around because they can put a lot of dog crates in there. The cargo capacities of minivans are great. You know, the standard by which most automakers design the interior is, if you fold down the seats, can you fit a sheet of plywood in the back, laying down flat? And then there are also all these features, like Adam mentioned, on the Sienna. Depending on the trim that you get, the second row of seats are essentially lazy boys. Like, they recline with footrests coming out.
Nice.
I can't imagine being, you know, a 13-year-old on a road trip, being able to recline my seat, plug my device into my own personal USB port, and just have, you know, a grand old time. Most of the minivans on the market today are available with in-car Wi-Fi. And it's really kind of take, you know, a minivan, if you get the right trim, can really take kind of your driving experience from ho-hum, I'm driving a car, to, you know, for your passengers, it's akin to a private jet, because that you can get them outfitted with things like, you know, refrigerators, vacuums, gaming consoles. There really is no limit to how luxurious you can make these minivans.
Well, that should certainly cut down on some of the family feuds going on in the second and third row that you cannot break up on the road. Let's go to Jessica now in Milwaukee. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Kate.
Hi.
I would like to say the visibility is wonderful in a minivan. I had a compact SUV and had terrible blind spots on either side, but in my Chrysler minivan, I can see nearly 360, and it's great because we move a lot. We moved up here from Florida and had zero issue, and it was great for moving. Packing all the stuff in there, I got a hitch on the back. It's been the best car we've ever owned.
How long have you had it?
About 3 years, and it's a 2001, so it's an old one, and if anything breaks, it's very easily replaced because they're so common and it's very inexpensive.
Jessica, thanks so much for the call. Jamie, Jessica loves that visibility and the ease of getting those part replacements when something does break.
Yeah, I mean, minivans are, as a whole, very inexpensive to run. They get very good fuel economy, you know, ranging from around, you know, 19 in the city up to 28 on the highway. And you can also get the Chrysler Pacifica as a plug-in hybrid, which will give you 33 miles of all-electric range, which is great if you're, you know, if you're just doing errands around town, driving kids, you know, to and from practice, dropping people off at appointments. You can do that almost entirely on electricity. And then when it's time for a long road trip or a move, you've got that gasoline engine backing you up. But the visibility on minivans really is incredible because they tend to have thinner pillars holding up their roofs than SUVs do, because SUVs are heavier than minivans. They need to be, have stronger pillars holding their roofs up in case of rollover. Well, minivans have less weight to hold on the roof if it rolls over. And honestly, if you manage to roll a minivan, I don't know what you were doing, but I recognize that accidents happen. But because you don't have to support so much weight on the roof in the event of a rollover accident, you can have these thinner pillars, which lead to better visibility. I should also say, too, you know, a lot of them are coming with 360 surround view cameras now. So even if visibility isn't great, you get a bird's eye view when you're parking, just right on the display screen in the dashboard.
Talking with Jamie Page Deaton, who is executive editor at U.S. News and World Report, we're tracing the minivan, where it is today, with your story as well. 800-642-1234. Tweet us, all things minivan, at WPR Mornings. We'll get back to this after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about minivans here on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Many car makers have stopped selling them as sales hit their lowest in more than 30 years. And over the decades, the label soccer mom and minivan became virtually inseparable. But in recent times, these soccer moms have apparently shunned them for three-row SUVs. So as we tour the history of minivans to inform our situation today, here is a Chevy Venture ad from 2000 with some help from Bugs Bunny.
Now there's a Chevy Venture with flip and fold seats and a built-in entertainment system.
I knew I should have taken a left turn at Albuquerque.
Introducing the Warner Brothers Edition from Chevy Venture, the most versatile minivan ever.
So what features in the minivan brought you into the market? What caused you to sell your minivan? Do you feel there is a stigma attached to the minivan that's deterred people from getting them? And do you think we'll see more minivans down the road or fewer? Join in with your minivan questions, your story, 800-642-1234. Jamie Page Deaton is our guide, and she's executive editor at U.S. News and World Report. Well, Jamie, the head of Honda says women have largely driven our shift in sentiment toward the minivan. What do you make of that and this whole soccer mom stigma?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, there's a lot of things that get associated with motherhood tend to get stigmatized, you know, whether it's minivans or, you know, mom jeans or mom haircuts. I think, you know, a lot of people feel like the minivan, because they are so practical and are not seen as stylish, really kind of signals a surrender to, I'm just going to be frumpy and focus on my kids and kind of give up a sense of self. I will say, though, like, you know, the minivan really is incredibly practical and incredibly useful. And I think, you know, there is a possibility that sentiments, you know, can change, you know, fashion and tastes change. And as a generation of kids that was driven around in, you know, SUVs and crossovers, as those kids grow up and they don't want to drive the same cars that their parents drove, you know, you could see a return to minivans, particularly because the minivan is such a good candidate for hybridization and other, you know, electrification and autonomous features, because it's a really versatile kind of platform and shell for automakers to play with. So, you know, while we aren't seeing a renaissance yet, you know, the crossover continues to dominate all sales. You know, in fact, crossovers outsell cars and have for the past, you know, few years. It really just comes down to what people are into. And the minivan got slapped, I think, unfairly with a stigma. But, you know, maybe consumers will realize that these are actually some of the smartest cars on the road, and they'll come around.
Oh, you think millennials will also be a bit nostalgic for what they rode around in their youth?
No, what I mean is, you know, we saw that I don't know, for me, you know, I was driven around in a station wagon. And so I was kind of like, well, gosh, I would never want a station wagon. But for kids that were driven around in a crossover or an SUV, I think they're going to associate that with, oof, that's the mom car. And we kind of see that already with some of these larger three-row SUVs and crossovers, where, you know, automakers are trying really hard to not make them look like SUVs and crossovers. So if you were growing up, you know, driven around in one of those cars, when it comes time to find a good practical car for your family, rather than pick just what your mom or dad drove, you might go back to the minivan, just like, you know, your parents rejected it. So it's a mild act of rebellion to go ahead and drive it.
Well, what do you make of these new three-row SUVs coming onto the market, like the Hyundai Palisade and the Kia Telluride? Are these new SUVs eating into that minivan market?
Oh, absolutely. You know, for people who want to have minivan practicality without it looking like they're driving a minivan, those are, you know, the cars and the options to buy. And they're essentially minivans on the inside. I just, you know, I'm currently testing the Telluride now. And the interior of it is, it's basically a minivan with a little bit less headroom. You know, you can't stand up and walk around in it. And it doesn't have sliding doors. But for all their intents and purposes, the interior is a minivan. Now, it does sit a little bit higher. It does not have the same comfortable turning radius that I think Adam mentioned. And it does not have the same visibility that the earlier caller mentioned. So you do make a lot of compromises, you know, in the name of looking slightly cooler.
So how do you get to that third row in the Telluride?
So there are a couple of ways. You can fold the second row seats out of the way. If the second row seat is pushed back because they're bucket seats, then you can just kind of walk past it, you know, and hang a right at the space between the two captain's chairs. What's nice about it, and this is a feature that comes from minivans, is if you have a child safety seat in the second row, you can still fold that seat out of the way to access the third row, which, again, what you see in a lot of family car features is they start in minivans. And then make their way over to crossovers. So in a way, automakers are, you know, using minivans as testing ground, and you know, these features that debut in minivans kind of end up digging the minivan's own grave, because they're just moved over into more popular models.
We're talking minivans, past, present, and future with Jamie Page Deaton. She's executive editor at U.S. News and World Report. What is your story about the minivan? How do you remember them as a kid? Are you returning to them? What do you think the future holds for minivans? We're at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Cheryl now, joining us from Appleton. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
We have had minivans since 1987. And we started with the Dodge and moved to, we have a 2007 Chrysler right now. And then when we bought a new one in 2016, it was a Honda. And my husband has a disability. He's got peripheral neuropathy, so his muscles, he doesn't walk very good, so he's on a scooter most of the time. And we have a Bruno Joey lift in each of our minivans so we can he can go wherever he needs to go. And he also has, we had hand controls installed in the one. Now we're selling that, and we're just going down to one vehicle. So we'll get hand controls put in the other one.
Was retrofitting pretty seamless for you, Cheryl?
Oh, yes. It was wonderful. You give up your third seat, and that's it. Otherwise, you have the first, you know, you have the driver's seat and the passenger, and then the second row, and it's just a wonderful way to still live your life.
What do you think of the Honda that you're driving now?
Oh, we wouldn't be without it. We love it.
Cheryl, thank you so much. Jamie, what do you hear there in Cheryl's story and how they adapted it?
I mean, a couple of things. One is, you know, the minivan is the most, you know, adaptable platform on the market. You know, there are a lot of these adaptability kits that you can get, you know, for SUVs or crossovers. I've even seen trucks that are modified, you know, with scooter lifts and things. But it really, the simplest and most economical car to modify if you have mobility issues is going to be a minivan. And again, because they're easy to get into, even if you don't need modification, but you just have some, you know, a little bit of trouble getting around, the minivan is going to be your best option. But, you know, Cheryl, driving, you know, the Honda Odyssey right now, that's our top ranked minivan. And if you're a driver, you know, the Honda Odyssey is, you know, the best driving minivan. And I know it seems to be a little bit of an oxymoron to talk about a sporty minivan, but the Odyssey really can handle itself because it's based on, you know, the Accord platform. It's also one of the more affordable minivans. You know, it comes very heavily contented at its starting price. The other thing is Honda has started putting in some really neat features. You talked earlier about breaking up those backseat squabbles. Honda has a camera that points down into the second row.
Oh, no.
Put that on the display in the dashboard so you can see who started it. The nice thing about it is that same camera has night vision. So if you're driving and you want to make sure everybody's staying asleep, it's got that. So it really, you know, these features that automakers are putting in there, you know, in some ways they're really mind blowing. But when you think about it, you're a parent, you know, your baby's in the back seat in a rear facing car seat. It's crying and you want to know why, to be able to hit a button and see what's going on. You know, that puts your mind at ease. It helps you out a little bit.
Well, Troy from DeForest wants to know whether minivans are staging a comeback. He says the trend seems to be to go to fuel-efficient cars. Does that hurt the minivan's chances? What about fuel economy?
So it's, you know, the minivans do tend to be, on the whole, more efficient than most SUVs and crossovers. However, you know, as crossover technology gets a little bit better, they're catching up when it comes to fuel economy. We're seeing, you know, a lot of plug-in hybrid crossovers coming to market. And so, you know, debuting, actually, I think it's just debuted this summer, was the Lincoln Aviator, which has a plug-in hybrid model where you can have all this all-electric range, and that pushes up the fuel economy, just like the Chrysler Pacifica plug-in minivan. So while minivans hold the edge right now, and if automakers start putting that technology in the minivans, you know, then they might take off. But my prediction is that automakers won't do that. And that's because, you know, this technology, fuel saving technology, is incredibly expensive to develop. So we really need to put it in the cars that have the highest profit margins and the cars that are really going to sell so you can recoup your investment. And right now, that's crossovers and SUVs. So even though you can get, you know, the hybrid Pacifica and it's got this great all-electric range, most automakers, I think, will be putting that technology in their crossovers first rather than their minivans, simply because they know they will sell more of them if they do that.
Sticker price for some of these minivans can be well over $40,000. Are these companies doing anything to lower the price?
Well, you know, that's for the highest trims. I mean, you can get a minivan starting at about $27,000, which is a lot less than the starting price of most three-row SUVs. But what automakers have found is that most minivan buyers are actually going for the higher trims because it's in those higher trims where you can get those kind of jaw-dropping features. And that's also where their profit margins are the highest. I mean, Toyota could sell you a $31,000 Sienna, or they could sell you a $49,000 Sienna. Well, they're going to make more money if they sell you the $49,000 one. But what's really nice about that is that, you know, nearly $50,000 Sienna, the interior really looks like it could be taken from a Lexus. It's incredibly high end. And then if you're looking at some of the other more affordable minivans, you know, the Kia Sedona, you know, the top trim there is $41,000. Still very, very nice. But if all you want is a practical people mover, you can get one starting at $27,000. So there's this range of prices there. It's just that most buyers opt for the more expensive features. I'd say too, because sales are so slow, you probably would be able to negotiate the price down quite a bit.
We're talking about these practical people movers, as Jamie Page Deaton calls them, minivans. We're getting to the heart of them. She's executive editor at U.S. News and World Report. Do you drive a minivan? What do you think about it? There's still time for your story, your questions, 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. It's a reality check on minivans here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. So I was a minivan convert when the twins came along. It felt practical, it felt convenient, and at a time when life throws curveballs and bulging double strollers, it felt really ready for more things than I was ready for. But around a dozen minivans have been discontinued in the past 15 years, and there are only five on the current market. Chrysler has the Pacifica, Honda Odyssey, we've been talking about, Kia Sedona, Toyota Sienna, Dodge Grand Caravan, and even the Caravan is due to be discontinued in the near future. So as the choices narrow, are you holding out hope? 800-642-1234. Jamie Page Deaton is executive editor at U.S. News & World Report. She stays with us. So Lucy from Waupaca couldn't stay with us, and she wanted to get a minivan, but she tested a bunch of them, and she didn't like blind spots. What was Lucy reacting to there?
Well, I don't know what kind of car Lucy was coming from, but, you know, there are some blind spots though in a minivan, though the visibility tends to be better than SUVs and crossovers. They are quite long. If the last time you were in a minivan was in kind of these early to mid 80s minivans, you know, the length of these has really gotten huge. They're no longer mini. It's just kind of, they're just smaller than the full size vans, but there's nothing really small about them. And automakers have responded to those, you know, blind spots and the difficulty seeing down the back and side of a long vehicle with, again, a lot of technology. So, you know, minivans like the Odyssey will come standard with blind spot warning systems. You can outfit it with blind spot cameras. So when you put on your signal to change lanes or to make a turn, you know, a display will show up in the dashboard to show you exactly what's in those blind spots. And then the other thing to think about, too, with minivans, and this is really true of all vehicles, but minivans have kind of a high belt line. That belt line is where the window and the side of the car meet. So it's where the car goes from being, you know, transparent and you can see out to where you can no longer see because there's metal there. And because of that high belt line, it can be very difficult to see shorter objects and people. And of course, when you're thinking minivans, you're thinking kids. And those are the people that tend to be around them. And those are the people that are going to be really hard to see. So just because a minivan is easier to drive than a crossover or an SUV, you still need to be careful, particularly in areas like maybe daycare parking lots or around, you know, soccer practices, playgrounds, or even driveways, because of that visibility for shorter people and objects is very poor. So again, though, automakers have responded to this. They've put in sensors in most new minivans that will, you know, beep as you're getting close to an object, or they have automatic rear braking. So even if you say, no, I don't see anything there, I'm going to go for it, the car won't let you. And then again, I mentioned earlier these surround view cameras, which use multiple cameras all around the car to project a bird's eye view of the car on the display. So you can see everything that's around you and you can say, oh my gosh, there was actually somebody there. Thank goodness I checked the display.
So you've said that if you were going on a girls' trip, that you would totally be in a minivan. Can you explain that? Tell us why.
Well, because, again, it's just luxurious. You know, if I was going to be, you know, driving several hours with a lot of friends, you know, why cram ourselves and our stuff in a convertible where only the front seat passengers are going to be comfortable and nobody can bring all the stuff they want because the trunk space is eaten up by the roof, when you can have a minivan where you can have, you know, a refrigerator in the back. You know, can be in the back lounging on the lounge chairs, watching a movie, using the Wi-Fi, plenty of space for the people in their stuff. And then, you know, if you get there and, you know, to your destination and you feel a little bit uncool, who cares? You know, coolness comes from the inside. You know, just roll up in your minivan like a boss. You made a practical, smart choice and you're going to arrive, you know, much more comfortable. I mean, I have to say, like, if I was driving, you know, from Wisconsin to Mexico, the minivan would be the car I would do it in because these are so comfortable and so practical. And they really just go down the road very easily. So even over, you know, uneven road surfaces, they really just handle it very well.
So Fiat Chrysler commands the market with the Dodge Caravan, and then you've been talking about the Pacifica, the Chrysler's Pacifica, but there's this rumor, strong rumors, that Chrysler is phasing out the Caravan. What do we know?
You know, the Caravan really isn't long for this world. It is a very well-selling minivan, but that's due to mainly fleet sales, not retail sales. They sell a lot of Grand Caravans to businesses. And minivans, I would say, if you have a business and you make a lot of deliveries, like if you're a florist or maybe a baker, something like that, where you need a lot of space in the back, but you're not delivering anything particularly heavy, a minivan makes a great choice. And so, again, what it comes down to, though, is, you know, consumer tastes. Chrysler can make more money focusing on SUVs than minivans. It would cost a lot of money to update the Grand Caravan. Within the Dodge dealership, you already have the three-row Dodge Durango SUV, which is a very strong SUV. And I think Dodge is kind of seeing the writing on the wall and saying, you know, people come into our dealerships to buy a Grand Caravan and they walk out in a Durango. We make more money on Durango sales. So let's just let the Grand Caravan kind of go quietly into the night.
Oh, quietly into the night. That sounds just like utter doom. Are any car companies thinking about bringing back? I'm thinking like VW. What are they thinking about the minivan these days?
Well, you know, VW has this one concept called the ID Buzz, and it's not quite what you think of when you think of a minivan. It's an all-electric, you know, Volkswagen bus, like from the 60s.
Oh, wow. So
it'll make a lot of aging hippies very happy, I think. If they bring it to market with limited changes to the actual look, because it seriously, it just looks like a VW bus, but it's got an all-electric motor, all-electric powertrain. That, I think, would be a great one because, again, you have, you know, that could really introduce a new generation to the idea of the van as the efficient car, the green car of the future, even if you have three or four kids. But that's the only one that I'm really aware of. And I think a brand that didn't have that kind of van heritage like Volkswagen does would have a lot of problems, you know, kind of justifying to their board why they're moving into this market because sales are so low.
Well, Mel emailed us to say he drives a full-size Ford van, which, you know, with wonderful visibility, Mel says, above the highway. He wants to ask which minivan would be the closest to that higher off the road feature.
Well, I mean, I'm guessing that that Mel is driving an E-Series van and not the Ford Econoline. So, or I'm sorry, he's driving a Ford Econoline and not the Transit Connect, because the Transit Connect is a delivery van that Ford makes, but it is car-based and a little bit lower. You know, most of the minivans, while they're not going to be as high as a four-wheel drive E-Series van is, if you go for something like the Sienna and you get all-wheel drive, which will give it a slightly higher stance, you'd be able to have a slightly higher view of the road. But I think what a lot of people like about minivans is compared to, you know, sedans and car and other cars, you do have this more upright, higher seating position. But compared to a truck, which I know for a lot of people can be a little bit disconcerting when you drive them, because it can feel like you're riding on top of like an elephant as the truck moves around. With a minivan, you're sitting upright, you have good visibility, you're taller than some of the other cars around you, but you're not so high that you feel tippy. So if folks are, you know, wanting something more upright, a minivan is a great way to do it, but there isn't one that's going to give that same kind of visibility as a full-size van. It's not going to be as high as that simply because that's just, they're just riding on a different platform.
Well, Steve emailed us as well, and Steve drove a Chevy Astro for years, loved the cargo and passenger space and the all-wheel drive options, and Steve was crushed when he learned they were discontinued. What do we know about the Astro?
Well, the Astro was just one of those, again, wasn't making the money. And so, you know, Chevy moved away from it. And, you know, really GM has been out of minivans for a really long time. I'm thinking, if memory serves, they dropped out in like 2010, around the time of the Great Recession. So again, they just saw, you know what, there isn't a lot of money to be made here. I'd also say, you know, the last few vans that GM made were not very good. And it was really, you know, Honda and Toyota and Kia really came in and were just kind of eating the domestic automakers' lunch when it came to minivans because their products were so much better. But when Chrysler reintroduced the Pacifica, it really reignited kind of the minivan wars, which is probably overstating it, but really reignited the race to be the best minivan, which used to be just kind of a two-way race between Honda Odyssey and Toyota Sienna. And now the Sienna, which is badly in need of an update, but, you know, still a great car, but just not as up-to-date as other minivans on the market. It really comes down to, you know, the two best are the Odyssey and the Pacifica. And, you know, you really can't go wrong with choosing either one of those.
Well, Jamie, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Jamie Page Deaton is executive editor at U.S. News and World Report. She is also a North American Car and Truck of the Year juror. Just ahead, Wisconsin's paper industry leads the nation. We take a deeper look at its inner workings. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're with us on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.